Welcome to It's All Politics from NPR News. I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm Ken Reardon.
And Ken, I apologize for my voice. I've got a little bit of a touch of something or other. I suppose it's because of all the shouting we've had this week. It's been a very exciting week.
It has been a very exciting week, and I think culminated by Gary Johnson versus Herman Cain
Thursday's
Republican debate in South Carolina.
Once again, we have to apologize for recording the podcast on Thursday before the biggest event of the week, and this week,
the biggest event of the day. Absolutely the biggest event of the evening.
Well, if not the century, the young century. Look, we've got Gary Johnson,
right.
Herman Cain,
right.
On the same right. stage with Ron Paul. That makes it two libertarians to one pizza salesman, and we also have
Tim Pawlenty.
The big guys. No, there's one other candidate we haven't named yet. We've got Gary Johnson,
right.
We've got Ron Paul,
uh-huh.
We've got Herman Cain, the excitement is building, we've got Tim Pawlenty, and
Rick Santorum.
Rick Santorum. All right, now, this clearly could be only one thing that could be this exciting, and that would be
the end of the podcast.
The entire Republican field for the presidency of the United States as of May 2011, gathering in South Carolina, where Fox News thought that they were going to be sponsoring the first really big, large field.
That's the best Ed Sullivan I've ever heard you do, by the way.
Thank you very much. For the 2012 Republican nomination, it would start here, and it would start right on Fox. And they only got five people.
Well, you know something? I wonder of all those other names that are out there who are not. We know that Mitt Romney's not going to be there. And, Newt Gingrich is not going to be there. Nobody else is going to be there.
John Huntsman's not going to be there because Mitt Romney's not going to be there.
No. You mean there are different people?
No. Actually, I think John Huntsman cares a lot about Mitt Romney. But we can talk about that
he
later.
He does. And I'm sure that Haley Barbour cared about Mitch Daniels.
Haley Barbour is not running. We know that.
But what else
we know
do
Chris
we know?
Is
but
not
do we
running.
Do we know if Mike Huckabee is running? Do we know if Michelle Bachmann is running? Do we really know if Huntsman is running? Do we know if Mitch Daniels is running?
Sarah Palin
is
running?
Is Sarah Palin running? Is any of the others? We don't know that.
And to the listener, if you can answer any of these questions, please send us an email immediately to Ron and Ken. Operators are standing by to take your
Now, phone. MSNBC also had a debate plan for early May, and they pushed it back to September, thinking, well, wait a second, nobody's showing up on this.
They had a debate scheduled in May. They pushed it back to
May 2nd. It was scheduled for May 2nd.
It is September 2011, though, right?
Correct, yes.
Okay, all right. So we're still in 2011. All right. I find it not just fascinating, but it's turning me around entirely. I really had expected so many Republicans to be out in this field running full bore at this point because
as we've seen in previous cycles.
Yes, as we've seen in previous cycles, but also because of the particular consensus within the Republican Party, overwhelming consensus, that Barack Obama was not a re-election candidate they needed to fear, the way people have traditionally feared presidents seeking a second term.
We saw that after the 2010 election, we said, well, okay, Obama is the Republicans.
He's not legitimate. He wasn't even born in the United States.
Well,
we don't have to submit to this man.
Isn't this remarkable? A week ago in the podcast,
we were still talking about
it. The conversation was birth certificates and Donald Trump and how silly that seems a week later.
It is funny because you're talking
about. I mean, it seemed silly then.
Well,
but
of course it was silly, but at least it was topical.
Right.
And we try to be one or the other. The question at that time was, is Donald Trump making a fool of himself talking about the birth certificate? Was it he who forced the president to finally bring forward a special exemption from the state of Hawaii, yada, yada, long-form certificate? Why are we still on this issue, et cetera? And then, boom, a series of things happened. The long-form certificate appeared to throw cold water on this long-running controversy, at least for the moment. Then we had the president and Seth Meyers, the Saturday Night Live comedian, and I do not take these kinds of events lightly because I think they do change the perception of people in the business about stories. They went to the White House Correspondents' Dinner on Saturday night. Now, of course, it's just an event attended by Washington people, and then it's seen
Washington
on
people?
C-SPAN. Then there are endless replays of
right.
these jokes on YouTube and so on, and so everyone sort of becomes aware that Donald Trump was thoroughly humiliated at this dinner, that he had to sit there and take it, that he didn't take it particularly well.
You watched that face during the
Seth Meyers
cutaways to it.
Hated the
I mean,
Seth
that stony face, yeah.
Donald Trump has been saying that he will run for president as a Republican, which is surprising since I just assumed he was running as a joke.
And clearly, those stung. So the birth certificate thing, big down thumbs indicator. Donald Trump's whole shtick, his whole persona as a political figure, big
has he
down
heard, has he been heard from since?
Not really. But then, of course, if there were any chance he were going to be heard from, that was buried under the avalanche of bin Laden coverage starting late Sunday night and running straight on into the week, which has been 90% of the news coverage ever since.
You know, when you looked at President Obama during that dinner, now, Obama knew exactly what was happening, and yet he was enjoying that evening, laughing uproariously at the jokes. And I wish I had thought of this, but somebody else wrote this. and I think it's very apt. You always think of Michael Corleone during the baptism scene in The Godfather. While he's sitting there and the baby's being baptized, all his lieutenants are out, eliminating...
Assassinating all of his rivals.
Michael Francis Ritchie, do you renounce Satan?
When you think back, I mean, at the time, you're watching Obama making all these jokes and laughing at all these jokes, and he's having the greatest time, not knowing for a second what was really going on. And then the 24-hour, later, it was just, like, remarkable that he was that poker face is so calm and so seemingly, having such a great time, not knowing such an amazing event. But, okay,
unbothered.
But we always talk about what this means. We always talk about the bump, and we've seen tremendous poll numbers showing a bump, maybe 9 points or whatever.
I've seen it all the way from one in one poll, which was always an outlier, up to 10 or 11, again an outlier. The consensus seems to be right around 6, 7, 8.
Yeah, and I think that's right. But what does that mean? Example.
One thing to say, and I basically agree with what I know you're going to say. You're going to say it's going to go away, and I agree with you.
Could go away.
But it is interesting that it's the first time he's had a clear majority approval to be in the upper 50s since 2009, right, and fairly early in 2009. It's 2 years ago that he was this high in the polls. That in and of itself is got to be a nice week for the president.
Okay, and two, perhaps it ends, and we don't know what's going to happen in Thursday's debate, and I assume foreign policy will be a part of the conversation in the Republican debate in South Carolina, and perhaps the image of President Obama as indecisive and weak and naive on foreign policy, that disappears as an issue for now. But again, we always go back to 1991, George H.W. Bush, the Persian Gulf War, the 90% approval ratings, and, a couple of months later, he didn't know how a food scanner worked, at a supermarket or wherever it was, and he got clobbered on the economy. So we can talk about this great foreign policy success, and I think, I don't know if it's a success, it's certainly a successful moment. It's certainly a moment that people have been waiting for 10 years, well, even more than 10 years, through three administrations, and it finally happened. But ultimately, what it means for November 2012, who knows?
Who knows? And really, the question is, can that kind of success be translated into some sort of a success in a domestic way? That's what George H.W. Bush couldn't do. Even Jimmy Carter got a little bump in the polls after the aborted raid that was attempting to free the hostages in Tehran.
He got a bump in the polls when the hostages were taken. And rather than say that Jimmy Carter was responsible, everybody rallied behind the president.
That's right.
That was doomed Ted Kennedy from the beginning.
On the other hand, if there is even a moment, even a window, in which he is seen more positively by independent voters, that gives him a little more leverage in dealing with the Congress on the budget issues, the raising of the debt ceiling, the working out of how they're going to compromise on the 2012 budget, how they're going to start getting deficit spending and the debt down, and ultimately other issues as well, if he can maintain even a portion of that bump that gets him above 50%.
Yeah, it may do something with independent voters. I don't think it helps his negotiation stature on Capitol Hill. I don't think anything changes. And if you looked at the Andy Cohut Pew polls and all that, the numbers on the economy didn't change 1%. Nor should it. Your handling of the economy doesn't improve because you got Bin Laden. So.
No, although we have seen in the past, particularly with George W. Bush and some of the terrorism incidents during his presidency, we have seen approval of his handling of the economy go up in a kind of diffusion effect. Yeah. When people really, really, really like some foreign policy triumph, such as the fall of Iraq in 2003, the fall of Baghdad, that helps him on the economy. It helps him on all these other numbers.
True.
And
that's
did not happen in this case, which really, really just underlines your point that ultimately this does not guarantee anything for 2012. And it just gives Obama a little bit of a window to breathe in.
The big controversy of the week seems to be whether to release the photos of Osama bin Laden. Somehow, I think between that and the decision to bury at sea seemed to me, in my mind, seemed to be the right decision. One, burial at sea, of course, you remove a shrine, a place to rally, support for bin Laden. Look, I don't think you need the assassination of bin Laden to inflame Islamic terrorism, because I think that's out there anyway. I don't think you need Osama bin Laden alive or dead to continue this anger at the West and the U.S. But I think, why deliberately inflame?
Well, I think also Leon Panetta, the CIA director who's soon to become the Secretary of Defense, was right to say, ultimately, in our age, these photos are going to be seen. They're going to come out. There's going to be a Freedom of Information Act request. There's going to be an effort made to eventually bring them out, and eventually they will out. But there's a big difference between allowing that to happen in due time and having the sort of ghoulish parading of these pictures at this moment, which is, you know, as the president said, we don't need to spike the ball. There are lots of negatives that I think we couldn't even glimpse until the pictures were out, and we don't know how grisly they are. But
apparently
I think
they are.
Well, yeah. Judging by the nature of the wounds and the nature of the weapon, I don't think there's any question they would be hideous.
Remind me, because I honestly don't remember, what was behind the decision to release the Abu Ghraib pictures? Because if memory serves, the president was also opposed to the release of those pictures, too, which would inflame people, which would increase anti-American sentiment.
They would not have come out except, this is my recollection, that they were being shared among some of the people who had taken them and participated in the staging of them, and they were passing them around, and some of them got on the internet.
That's right.
And once they got on the internet, this is true of the Bin Laden pictures as well, there's no restraining it. And speaking of all of that, I mean, a lot of people were noticing that May 1st, the day that all this went down, was the anniversary of the Mission Accomplished banner 8 years ago on the USS Abraham Lincoln.
It was also, if memory serves, the anniversary of the Adolf Hitler suicide. It's interesting how these traumatic international events, the reaction back home. But you know something? There is a difference between the Bush reaction to Mission Accomplished and the Obama reaction. As you say, Obama deliberately did not want to spike the ball. He seemed to go out of his way to not, first of all, nothing really changes. I mean, the war on terror is still awful. The war in Afghanistan is still not going well. I mean, ostensibly, the reason we were in Afghanistan was to get Bin Laden. Now that we got him, is it mission accomplished now? And I think a lot of people on the left are saying, well, wait a second. If the mission was to get Bin Laden, then why stay?
Why are we in Afghanistan? Well, obviously, the only mission was not to get Bin Laden. The larger mission was to defeat Al-Qaeda, and beyond that, the Taliban.
And that's not going so well.
And that has not gone well
with
at all.
Without Bin Laden.
No, here we are almost 10 years into the longest war in American history, and it's not clear we even really have the upper hand. I think most of the time we're being told that we do, but then there are moments of evidence that it's not quite that simple. And, of course, we all know, and so do the Taliban, that we want to get out as soon as possible.
Yeah, and they were just waiting. I
mean, and all they need to do is wait, and we will get out, because there really isn't that much will in this country. The polls are clearly in favor of pulling out and leaving them to themselves. Now, that may not be good foreign policy. And the people that you hear, that I listen to, that I think are wise about foreign policy, warn that if we pull out of Afghanistan, we're going to destabilize Pakistan, and this is a country that could go falling into the hands of the Taliban. They have nuclear weapons. They're poised on the brink of India, who is a warming ally of ours. This could be a profoundly destabilizing thing if we pulled out of Afghanistan, but if we're going to bow to public opinion on this and just retract this entire thrust, this would probably be the moment to do it.
Speaking of public opinion and speaking of Pakistan, I don't know if this is a podcast-related subject, but my goodness, the story to me is the fact that Osama bin Laden was living, hiding in plain view. But I mean,
when you see walls that are 18 feet high with barbed wire on top, you figure, who's living in there, Donald Trump?
What if they were Indian extremists? What if they were pro-Indian folks? Do you think they might have
spotted him by then?
You think so?
No, they were within a short walk of what was essentially the Pakistani West Point, their military academy. 6 miles up the road is their stash of nuclear weapons, or part of it. This is a circumstance, a decision that was anticipated in one of the debates during the primaries back in 2007.
If we have actionable intelligence on Al-Qaeda operatives, including bin Laden, and President Musharraf cannot act, then we should. Now, I think that's just common sense.
The fact is that we sent in these helicopters without notifying the Pakistanis. I'm convinced that's the only reason why it's a success.
Well, if we had told the Pakistanis that we were doing it, you know, that guy with 500 euros sewn into his pajamas would have been over the wall and, you know, halfway to Lahore. All right, we have to make a big, big segue here because we've been talking about foreign policy, we've been talking about the presidency, but we've got some interesting developments back here in the States.
We do. The big news, I think, politically, at least in Senate races, of course, this week, John Ensign of Nevada, the disgraced Republican senator, had a farewell speech on the Senate floor on Monday.
Goodbye.
He resigned on Tuesday. And, of course, the reason he resigned on Tuesday, because he was scheduled to testify under oath on Wednesday about his dealings with his girlfriends, families, the money that they gave his mistress.
And whatever. People say senators can't think straight. It sounds to me like he had this pretty well worked
so
out.
So Brian Sandoval, the governor, is appointed Dean Heller, who appointed...
No, Sandoval is a Republican.
Is a Republican.
And he nominated Dean Heller, another Republican.
That's right. And that's not always the case, by the way.
No,
as you
not
do
absolutely
remember, like
always.
In Wyoming, the Democratic governor nominated John Barrasso, the Republican, because he was mandated by state law to do that. But anyway, so Dean Heller will become the new senator on Monday, which opens up Dean Heller's House seat. And the Democratic Secretary of State, and I'll tell you why I point that he's a Democrat, the Democratic Secretary of State announced that what they will have is a free-for-all for that to succeed Dean
all parties,
Heller.
All comers on one ballot.
On one ballot, no runoff, no D's or R's, everybody in the same. And so if the Republicans have an internecine battle that includes Sharon Angle, first of all, remains popular, but not with the Republican establishment.
Tea Party nominee for the Senate who lost to Harry Reid last fall.
In 2010, right? And Sharon Angle has run for this House seat before. She's going to run again. She's already announced she will run for the seat. She says, I know that Democrats want to defeat me, but liberal Republicans want to defeat me even more, and the Republican establishment, maybe three or four Republicans are going to get in because they do not want to see Sharon Angle win.
But wouldn't they be
seat.
Better off if only one of them got in?
Absolutely, because even though this is a Republican seat, if the Democrats rally behind one Democrat, and already the state treasurer has jumped in the race, if there's only one Democrat in that race, the Democrats could pick up that seat.
And in the state of Indiana, perhaps the shock of the week, was that Mike Pence, the member of the House, Republican, conservative, sometime Tea Party champion, has decided to run for governor of Indiana to succeed Mitch Daniels.
The term limited Mitch Daniels, right? And, of course, there was some talk by Mike Pence and perhaps members of Mike Pence's family, although I doubt it.
A larger group than that.
That he was talking about running for president at some
was.
Point.
I think he was serious. I think he wishes he were in South Carolina tonight instead of in Indianapolis, because I think he actually would rather be president but overestimated the field.
You know, so there's one more thing about the Republican field in South Carolina or the potential Republican field. Is everybody madly in love with the John Huntsmans of the world and the Mitch Daniels of the world because they're not running or they may not run? In other words, if Mitch Daniels were running, wouldn't everybody be talking about, well, he's blocking Planned Parenthood from abortion and his draconian budget cuts? But now that he's probably not running, he's the smart man's candidate. He's everybody's the perfect candidate if he would only run.
But the media always
do. We do that. Remember Ted Kennedy?
We absolutely seduced Ted Kennedy
Remember
into running
Ted
for
Kennedy
president
in 1979,
and then slammed
if you would
and hammered
only run,
and murdered the man as fast as we could.
If the media, the Democratic establishment, if you would only run, you would save the country from Jimmy Carter. The moment he announced, it was Chappaquiddick, it was Roger Mudd, it was all that stuff all over again, and he never had a chance.
That's, we did the same thing with Harold Stassen more than once.
Eight times, in fact.
That's it for this week's political podcast.
You can follow NPR's political coverage at npr.org/politics.
I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm Ken Rudin.
Join us again next week for It's All Politics from NPR.